From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal. And our moderator is Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. With millions watching on TV, mourners wearing masks packed the Houston, Texas church for the funeral service of George Floyd, who was killed while in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Meanwhile, the outpouring of grief, outrage, and public demonstrations sparked by Floyd's death continued in the United States and around the world. The protests have very quickly sparked calls for significant change as cities and states rethink the concept of public safety and social justice. From restraint tactics to operating budgets, all aspects of policing in the United States are under scrutiny. The wave of anti-racist protests in the United States, triggered by the death of George Floyd, have continued globally. The toppling of a statue of a slave trader in the English city of Bristol inspired demands for similar symbols of racism to be abolished. The Trump administration responses to COVID-19 and the Floyd protests have caused U.S. President Donald Trump to slip in recent polling. The president is responding with some of his most aggressive attacks on Twitter to date, a proposed campaign rally, and a national address on race. And Trump's infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, warned on Tuesday that the fight against the coronavirus spread is far from over. The news comes as the U.S. continues to slowly reopen from lockdown while grappling with the massive protests in cities across the U.S. that may have sparked a new wave of infection. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. We really miss having you in front of us at the studio, but good to have you here digitally on Skype. Let's start with the Floyd funeral and the continued protests. The service was televised around the world. George Floyd was laid to rest in his native city of Houston, Texas. And this some 2 weeks after his death. The protests continue across the country, calling for both justice for George Floyd and for social change and social justice at large, writ large. And start with you, Dan. Where are the protests happening? This is interesting to me that the protests are not just in the big cities anymore, are they?
They're happening everywhere in the United States, even towns and cities where the black population is not large. And when you see the protesters, even here in the Capitol in Washington, D.C., it's not only black people. It's not only African Americans. There are so many people of all races who are marching with the same signs, often chanting the same slogans, including Black Lives Matter. And so it seems to have united people, okay, you could say of a liberal nature. People who politically are liberal are certainly sympathizing with the demonstrators, whereas so many conservatives are claiming that the demonstrations got violent. They're still focusing on the small outbreaks of looting and the fires that were set, including in Minneapolis, where George Floyd was murdered by the police. And so I'm again seeing this liberal conservative split, which is so sad, of course. But when it comes to those who really now care about the issue, who've been sensitized, who feel that George Floyd was, in effect, a martyr to a cause. And he wasn't trying to be an activist, but in death, that's what he's become. I find that this whole incident, in fact, has been a uniting factor. A lot more sensitivity toward race issues. And absolutely, as you say, not only in the big cities, Michael.
That's a really interesting take, Dan, that you see it as a uniting factor because so many, as you did, you rightly pointed to the divides, but to overall see it as a uniting factor, I think is a very, very interesting take on the whole thing. Tom, I want to go to you. The protests have become larger, in fact, than they were at the beginning and more organized than they were at the beginning. Is that your take on it? And is that a good thing?
I think that's right. It is my take, and I think it's a good thing. The protests have become more orderly. Violence has pretty much gone by the boards at the moment. You never know when it might change, but at the moment you have millions of people, and I have to believe some of them who have never been involved in this sort of demonstrations outwardly seem to have been, to use Dan's word, sensitized to a degree that we have not seen in this country. I mean, the polls already are showing more than two-thirds of the American people feel strongly about this. This sounds like, to use a new word these days, an inflection point. This death of George Floyd has really altered public perceptions and altered the political realities. It has become an inflection point. I think there's no going back from that. It will have one unfortunate aspect, and that is it will contribute to the polarization that we have seen in this country in recent years, where there's not a lot of middle ground. However, I do think the outpouring of grief, and not just from African Americans, is a positive development, as it's going to force the country to take harder looks at the matter of race. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
And I'm going to give you both a bite at the apple on this one, because there has been talk within conservative media about the life of George Floyd, because mostly what we know about him are the last 8 minutes and 40 some odd seconds of that life. We know more about his death than about his life. People who have examined his life and done research have said that because of issues that he's had with the police, some time spent in jail, that he's not worthy of being held up as a martyr or a symbol of change. Tom, I want to start with you and stay with you, I guess. Is this past really an issue? Is that a viable issue to discuss at this point, considering what has happened and what the circumstances of his death were?
Michael, looking strictly at the optics of the moment, the politics of the moment, that is not, conservatives do not have the high ground on that issue. Yes, he is, George Floyd may not have been a model person his entire life, but he has in death become a symbol. It's a legitimate symbol. I think to make statements like we've seen from some conservative leaders is probably not the wisest place to be, strictly from a political standpoint these days.
Dan, your thoughts?
Well, it's symbolism above all. George Floyd died at age 46. He wasn't trying to be a hero. He wasn't trying to campaign for civil rights. But one thing that even white men like me, who've grown up mostly in the United States, yes, I was overseas for about 15 years in my career. You know, one thing that we've learned and been sensitized to in the past 2 weeks or so is that just trying to live in this country as a black man often means you're confronted with challenges, with either low expectations or unfair expectations, police who are thinking the worst of you, and even the feeling that, you know, white people are suspecting you and afraid of you all the time. I mean, these are things, by the way, that I really never spoke about. I've been covering mostly world affairs and maybe going along thinking that the United States was becoming a better country since protests and riots of the 1960s. Well, it does seem to have become a better country, but we're not there yet. And so George Floyd, like the protesters are saying, say his name, not because he in what he did in his 46 years was heroic, but instead what he symbolizes, and that the police killed him and thought they could get away with that, killing him right in front of video cameras, right? People holding up their phones and still the police thinking they could get away with it. It's not about George Floyd and how he lived. It's clearly about how he died.
I love that. Thank you, Tom. Will protests with justice for Floyd, because we still have to have a trial, will the protests end with justice for Floyd, or will protests continue until a broader justice for all is secured?
I think that could be a long time, Michael, but I do think the protests will continue, especially they will continue if there is a sense that America's leaders are not paying sufficient attention to this. Already there have been congressional hearings. There will be more congressional hearings. And I think there will be a lot of pressure to force Congress and force the Trump administration and other leaders of the country to address this in a larger way. The president is going to staging a campaign rally next week at the site in Oklahoma of one of the worst racial massacres ever. There's talk about him using that vehicle as a way to do a speech on race. All of these things could be positive developments, unless they turn out to be polarizing, remains to be seen. But I don't think the protests are going away, and I don't think this is going to be a passing fixation, especially with less than 5 months to go till a national campaign.
Let's move on from the protests to the actual implementation of change. George Floyd's death has triggered a groundswell of outrage and activism, of course. And as we said in the open, people are rethinking the concept of public safety and how that's accomplished through police in the United States. Many are calling for things like defunding the police. The Minneapolis City Council has floated a proposal to actually disband the city's police department. We're seeing bans on chokeholds imposed by states and by cities. Dan, there's a lot of money being spent on policing in the United States. That's not up for debate. But what is meant by defunding the police? Do people really want to have no police at all?
And the global audience to the Voice of America may have noticed that became a slogan in the protests. Defund the police. That's on a lot of signs. That's on a lot of messages on the social networking. And frankly, to some protesters, it does mean to abolish the police in urban areas where the police have been so insensitive. A lot of focus on that city of Minneapolis where George Floyd was killed. So to some protesters, it means we don't need the police. We need some other force from the community itself. Others who have more experience perhaps in the politics of American cities and in government say, well, you can't do that. But defunding could mean reduce the funding. That's the talk we're hearing from New York City and the mayor, Bill de Blasio, who is a liberal and has had a lot of friction with the police of his own city. De Blasio wants to divert money from the police budget to other things like social workers, like people who actually would be based in the community and helping people when they have problems, that the police shouldn't be going and answering every call, including when folks are having family problems, strife, violence, you know, between men and women within a family. Should the police be doing everything? And so this is going to take some time, and every city, every community is going to have a different answer. But it did become a national slogan, defund the police, because money talks. And if America is spending billions of dollars on the law enforcement forces, and it's something that President Trump really wants, more spending on police, even as an answer to the protests in the streets recently, opinion polls show that a majority of Americans don't agree with President Trump. And so we're going to see changes in a lot of places where they're going to try to reduce the funding to the police and increase the funding to social services.
Tom, I want to get your thoughts on that, and we'll do that right after we take this break. We'll be back with more of Issues in the News.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, and our moderator, Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome back to Issues in the News. Tom, Dan was talking about the defunding movement and the thoughts about administrators looking to move money from law enforcement to those institutions within the government that would keep people out of the criminal justice system in the first place. Everything from first contact with the police to social programs like child daycare, aftercare, home services, all sorts of things that are meant to keep people from having these interactions with the police in the first place. The police themselves have something to say about this, of course. And Minneapolis Chief of Police, Maria Arredondo, withdrew from negotiations with the police union, a very strong political force in United States law enforcement. Describe what the unions do and what their role is to play in this whole issue of law enforcement in the United States.
Well, basically, the unions are there to protect the rank and file police officers. And they raise money for bail when officers are charged. But basically, they are there to protect the interests of police officers, people who basically, you probably could never pay enough to compensate them for some of the things they do. I must say, though, that police unions are now not looking so great, and I think their political clout is probably going to be somewhat diminished by all of this. But I also want to say that the term defund the police is a really bad slogan. I think what people who feel strongly about these sorts of issues really should be saying, and maybe they really are saying, is reform the police. Take different looks at policing. But when you rally around defund the police, it gives opponents, including the Trump White House, ammunition to fire back. The president's press secretary in the last few days from the White House podium in the briefing room made very strong statements about defunding the police and about eliminating the police. Well, I think no sane person is really supporting eliminating the police. You must have a public safety function, but there's reasonable room for debate on exactly how the police powers will go forward and to what extent some of those functions now taken over by the police might be better served with other institutions.
And Dan, I want to go to you to finish this topic out. As Tom said, the Trump administration's line has been very clear about this. Democratic nominee for president, former Vice President Joe Biden, says that he is not in favor of defunding police, but I believe he has a much finer line to walk when he communicates about this with his party. What are your thoughts?
Well, in his own background as a United States senator, and then as the vice president during the 8 years of Barack Obama's presidency, Joe Biden often was, well, as he would have put it, tough on crime, including a crime reform law that frankly was very, very tough on inner city residents and seemed to take sides with the police. That's what Joe Biden was, even, you know, as a Democrat in government. But, you know, anyone who's running for president has to sort of position himself, and often you move toward, if you're seen as being on the right, you move toward the left and vice versa and looking for the center. And so you forget about what possibly is sincere and real. But when it comes to how he has reacted to the killing of George Floyd, well, Vice President Biden has absolutely taken sides with the peaceful protesters. And though he had spent months at his home in Wilmington, Delaware, because of the COVID virus, the former vice president actually flew to Houston, Texas to visit the family of George Floyd just before the funeral and burial. And so I would say that Joe Biden has taken a position that sides with the protesters, that sides with change, that says that there is systemic racism in this country. Even as the president and every official of the Trump administration, they get asked by reporters, is there systemic racism in the United States and in the police forces? And the answer from the Trump administration is no. And the Biden side says yes. And the opinion polls seem to favor Biden on this.
Indeed, with almost all things in the U.S., it seems to be a way to look at the same thing and get two completely different views of it. So that is probably also likely to continue. I want to skip over to the polls and sort of election and political matters. President Trump showed declining numbers in a variety of polls taken in the past week. In a recent Gallup poll, his approval ratings dropped to 39% from 49% just a month ago. And his disapproval rating in that same poll went from 46% to 57%. And a CNN poll had him trailing Joe Biden by 14 points nationally. It's kind of a historic type of number. Tom, I'll start with you. These numbers, do they matter in the short term or the long term?
They do matter in the short term and the long term. Now, I have always said overnight is a lifetime in politics, and we have almost 5 months worth of lifetimes every day between now and November the 3rd. But these polls are significant because they're showing a trend. Biden has been leading by a little bit over Trump, and now these numbers, and they're all pretty consistent. You'll have an outlier here and an outlier there, but these are numbers that show a larger disparity between Trump and Biden than we have seen for many, many months. And that suggests that this has not been a particularly good year for the president. He's been grappling with the coronavirus. This is an issue that race in America is a divisive, polarizing issue. People feel strongly about it on both sides of the aisle. And what it suggests to me is the president's political fortunes have diminished. And the word is that there are internal polls of the Trump campaign that look even worse than many of these national polls in terms of slippage by the president. And the president is described by friends as somewhat befuddled is a pejorative word. I don't mean it to be pejorative at all, but the president is concerned at these numbers in the polls and looking for ways to figure out how to reverse what, for the moment, is definitely a slide in public opinion.
Well, the tactics of the moment seem to be the tactics of the past for the Trump administration, doubling down on tough guy talk on Twitter and in written and live appearances. He's accused a protester who was injured during a demonstration in Buffalo, New York, 75-year-old man who was knocked over by police and hospitalized. He's accused that protester of being a conspirator and an anarchist, and on and on and on. Also planning a rally, as Tom mentioned before, allegedly a speech on race, a national address on race that's being planned by some of his aides. Dan, all of these things, is any of it enough to reverse the slide? And if Trump goes down, does the entire party go down with him?
Well, we have more than 4.5 months till Election Day. It'll be in early November. So a lot can happen. And people close to the Trump campaign say, we've only just begun. And they're really just going to restart the rallies, which the president believes are very effective. He enjoys them anyway, speaking often for 2 or 3 hours to a crowd that cheers everything he says. It gives him energy. It energizes his voters. And of course, this worked for him in the year 2016. Just remember that Hillary Clinton, the Democrat, got more votes than Donald Trump, but it's counted on a state-by-state basis, our electoral college. And so the president's campaign knows where they should focus his efforts. So I wouldn't count him out, even though right now it indicates that the popular vote could go heavily for Joe Biden. Mind you, if Biden wins by 14 percentage points, he'll be elected president. But a lot could change. What is the Biden campaign going to be like? There actually are Democrats who advise Joe Biden to go back to his basement in Wilmington, Delaware. He's been doing so well without any rallies, but they're going to have to be rallies. There, of course, will be debates between Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden. A lot can change. So I'm not counting out Trump and just his sheer animal instincts for motivating his kind of voters. Right now, it looks like Biden is a likely winner in November, but it's still early.
Dan, I want to stay with you and talk a little bit about a COVID-19 update. Anthony Fauci has warned that the fight against the virus is far from over. We've had massive protests throughout the United States and throughout the world while people are still grappling with the pandemic. We've seen a lot of mask wearing, but you know, still the idea of social distancing has been completely abandoned during these types of protests. Any idea when we'll know what the effect of these protests have been on the U.S. response to coronavirus?
Well, we think very soon in the following way, right? You had the protests soon after George Floyd was murdered by the police in Minneapolis. So you had protests in the streets, and you're right, a lot of people gathered together and were not staying 2 meters away from each other. We're wondering if about 2 weeks later, we'll see a surge in coronavirus cases. It's what a lot of doctors, you know, expected. And as things stand, just because of the so-called reopening of the economy and people going to the beach and walking around resort areas and trying to relax and returning to bars and restaurants in many states, we are seeing the number of diagnosed cases going up, the number of hospitalizations going up. In many states, there is real concern about the so-called second wave. And one thing that's been declared by federal government officials is we're not going to close down the economy again. We think the hospitals can handle it this time. The truth is, there's still not a perfect, you know, therapeutic method for treating COVID-19 patients. And of course, there is no vaccine. But President Trump thinks it would be horrible for him politically if he were to close the economy down. So we're going to see these two forces sort of fighting each other. Those who want to return to economic growth after the sudden recession that America and economies around the world suffered versus the health concern. The number of deaths is likely to go up. And as we record this, there are about 110,000 Americans who've died from COVID. And we have new predictions that could reach 200,000 within a few months.
Stunning numbers. Gentlemen, you both educate and elevate this conversation. And I couldn't be more grateful. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this week. Thanks to Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal. This program is produced by the Voice of America. And I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.